Grave Tone.
Welcome to Grave Tone Podcast, where horror comes to life in every form it takes. I'm Megan.
I'm Arthur.
And it's new release week.
Yeah, finally. It's been a while.
No, it's okay. That's not true. We only had like a couple of weeks without a movie.
And it was terrible.
It was not terrible. I mean, we didn't go see Scary Movie, so.
Yeah. That's okay.
We'll see it eventually. I'm not a big fan of those, so sorry.
I like one and two.
Sorry, everybody.
That's about it.
Womp womp. But I was excited about this movie.
I know.
Which is why we went to see it.
I know. This movie is getting like crazy ratings right now. Okay, I think Rotten Tomatoes has like at 93. This is like obsession level early ratings type of thing. You know what I mean?
I'm really hoping that it kind of winds up with like a similar amount of hype, in the sense that at least that it has like a good amount of people who go to see it. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping this doesn't fall under the radar.
Yeah, because it seems like it's a smaller release, but it should like... It should be big.
Yeah.
Make it big, man.
Yeah, do that. Do that thing. I mean, Obsession was like its own like insanity, and I think that was maybe...
I mean, it had a whole whole following.
It did, yeah. And I think it was like a bit of a flash in the pan. Backrooms, like kind of same thing, because it had like a cult following prior to the release of the film. I'm thinking of something that exploded the way that like Talk to Me did, where I think people generally who weren't super familiar with the Philippou brothers, and they didn't have like as much hype when the film came out. I don't remember it being hyped up as much. And then I watched it and I was like, oh my God, wow, what the fuck?
I know. Hey, well, speaking of Talk to Me, the lead in this movie is... The little brother from Talk to Me.
Yeah, Joe Bird, who played Riley in Talk to Me, which is so cool. Love seeing that. And I love like a little sort of like connection like that within it. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So obviously today we're talking about Leviticus. Just in case you didn't guess from the title of the episode. Obviously this is an incredibly timely release. It's Pride Month. Everybody is well aware. Happy Pride. I'm sure I've said that already this month, but I'm saying it again. This is a new entry into the like queer horror space, which there's like a much bigger, I think, queer horror scene than people are aware of. And I think that's really cool.
It is very nice. Yeah. I agree.
So we're talking about Leviticus today. This film is an Australian production and...
Also Australian horror scene, another thing to talk about.
Oh my
Holy
gosh.
Holy crap.
Yeah, they've just got, I don't know, there's something really visceral and almost like... I don't know. It's just there's something about Australian horror that feels very...
It feels very real.
Real. Yeah, know? That's it. It just feels very like stripped down.
It's very raw.
In a way, yeah. It doesn't feel like it's overly flashy or very Hollywood, quote unquote. It feels like it's telling like a real and raw story, regardless of what the film is. It's crazy.
Yeah, and this one was also the case.
Yeah, very much. So let me read the little IMDb synopsis for people who like aren't aware of this. And obviously we'll get into more plot detail a little bit later. But the overall one, let's see, new movies are always fun that way. Two teenage boys must escape a violent entity that takes the form of the person they desire most, each other. And that's it.
Okay.
I mean, at very, very surface level, I guess that's what this movie's about.
I mean.
Yeah.
Sure.
At base level, like very base level.
There's so many layers to this movie and stuff, but yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That's what it is. How would you describe it?
I would describe this more as like a queer...
Give me the MMDB. Megan Movie Database.
Oh, that was terrible. I would describe this more as like a like queer coming of age horror that follows, that's it, two young boys who... need to battle both the homophobia and religious trauma of their very small town in Australia, while also kind of navigating their way through growing feelings and their own sexuality. Like that's basically what it is. And it's got and it takes that and transforms it into like a supernatural horror film. That's really like what at base level, that's really what the film's about.
No, it's very well said. And like we mentioned when we were talking about it a little bit, this is... has very much a feel of It Follows.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're going to get into it a little bit, how the whole supernatural horror element works in this.
Yeah.
But it has a very interesting kind of, like, I don't know if it's a shout-out or concept of It Follows. It's definitely that.
I think that if you are into the metaphor in It Follows, which in that film is obviously that, like, you know, premarital or teenage sex and things like that leads to an STI. Like, it's the fear around all of that. This one is, it kind of takes that element away and it leans more into the fear of, that's it, homosexuality, that's brought on by the religious overtones within basically this entire town in which the film takes place, and how that affects the young people in the town.
Yeah, exactly. Which is something actually the, I think it was a director or the cinematographer that they chose this town specifically when they were doing it, so that it was kind of centered around this church that is very bleak in general. And the surrounding areas is just kind of like a graveyard of industrial buildings.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like really anything that's keeping it together is the church community, essentially. You know what I mean?
Exactly. That's it. Because this was released at Sundance back in January and during the midnight section of the Sundance Film Festival. And I think was met with very high praise while it was there. So it was picked up by Neon shortly thereafter for distribution.
Yeah.
And also the name of the film is Leviticus, which is, that's it again, we're talking about like religious connotations. So the book of Leviticus famously is one of those books that's known for like very overt homophobia, because it has specific textual references to two men lying together and that being an abomination. And
the verse is literally, do not lie with a man as with a woman.
That yes, exactly. And that's it. This is both of them have committed an abomination. They will be put to death is, I believe, what the actual passage is in the Bible. So
that's it.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of nominations for this movie, it was nominated for an audience award at South by Southwest.
Oh, nice.
So that's pretty
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. I get it.
No, seriously, it's good.
This is a great movie.
I wouldn't say it's like your traditional horror movie. You know what I mean? Yes, it has good jump scares. It has some gores and whatever it is, but
I think the horror comes from the themes of the film.
Yes,
more
exactly.
than anything.
That's
and the reality that these characters are living in.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, again, like, it kind of, you know, makes me think of Obsession a little bit. Like maybe,
I get that.
You know, there's a lot of
similar,
not themes, but the way that the horror is portrayed, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me go through cast really briefly, and then we can do first thoughts.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, cool. So, as mentioned previously, Joe Bird plays the lead character of Naim, N-A-I-M. I heard it multiple times in the movie, and I had to stop and be like, Name like N-A-M-E? I'm confused, but no.
Hello, my name is Naim.
Yeah.
What?
It's called N-A-I-M is the way that it is spelled. As mentioned, that's it, played by Joe Bird, who played the character of Riley in Talk to Me.
Seriously, this guy, I don't know why I was watching this movie, and I'm like, first of all, amazing.
Oh, he's
right,
so good.
Incredible. Like, even in his...
But I remember thinking in Talk to Me, I was like, man, the kid who plays the brother is so good.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, even when he did that supporting role in Talk to Me, he was praised by, like, The Independent and the New York Post, whatever it is, for being, like, phenomenal and everything,
so
which is very true.
Yeah.
But when I was watching this movie, I don't know why, I was like, this guy would be really good in a zombie movie. Put him in a... I don't know why. I don't know if it's the way that his, like, his face is or the way that he plays the characters. I'm like, zombie movie, this guy.
He looks very sad a lot. It's just the way his face is. I think he just looks really sad. And I'm like, oh, buddy. Then we have the character of Ryan, played by Stacey Clausen, who is giving young Heath Ledger in like the best way possible, by the way, in this movie. I can't be the only person who thinks that.
Oh, yeah.
Other people who watch it,
that.
Tell us in the comments. Other people who watch it, tell me if you feel this way too. Because I was like, oh, wow. Okay. We have a few other supporting characters. Mia Wasikowska, who's very well known, plays Naim's mother, who's never named, I don't think, throughout the course of the film.
I don't remember. Maybe.
I think maybe the preacher might say it at the
beginning
of the film.
Yeah, when they met with the preacher and stuff,
correct.
It's possible. But
yeah, that's
she's
it.
So hateable that like you don't even want to remember her name.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we're going to get into that shit later. Talk about one of the times that I don't sympathize with a mother. We have the deliverance preacher, who also has no name, played by an actor named Nicholas Hope, as well as Jeremy Blewett, who plays the character of Hunter, and Ewan Leslie, who does play the preacher. I genuinely have no idea what his character's name is either, but yeah. So, before we kind of get into like the more, I guess, like meat and potatoes of it,
meat and potatoes. What in the world? You've never said that before.
I have, just not in this context.
What the hell?
Anyway,
I want meat and potatoes.
You're so funny.
I'm kind of hungry.
I know. You didn't eat enough today. So, okay, before we kind of get into the more spoilery bits of things, first, I mean, we've kind of been talking about it already, but first thoughts upon leaving and everything. We really did not talk about this on the way home. And it's funny.
We were just like sitting quiet in the car and I'm like, are you okay?
You know what I feel? I feel like the majority of the time when that happens, I'm like, we really liked this movie because we don't want to give away any of our thoughts until we get home.
No, it's true. We do that. So this is like raw right now. This is raw stuff.
Exactly.
So my first thoughts. My first thoughts, first of all, is to mention the fact that on other platforms, if you're listening to this,
wow,
we are sorry, not sorry, but yes, there are ads that are in between the episodes. I know it sucks, but if you don't want that, you can listen to us on Spotify.
Correct.
So there's no ads on Spotify. It's ad free, except for whatever Spotify inserts in there if you don't have a premium account, but not much we can do about that, unfortunately, but it is ad free. So there is that. And also, again, I feel like we've mentioned this in the past like 10 episodes, but for everyone who's rating the show, thank you so much. Please keep doing this. It helps a lot. And
Gary is currently digging a grave in your honor.
That's right. He works really hard.
He really does. Man, we do not give him a break.
All right. My first thoughts. You know, I don't even know what to say. Like, there's so many things that I want to say, I think, that is just kind of blocking me, essentially. It was raw again. It was one of those things that it was not too cinematic. And, you know, the kind of color palette was very subdued, which is interesting because they chose a person for this specifically, the production designer.
Oh, yeah.
They chose specifically because of her palette. Color palettes are like, you know,
that makes sense.
Very subdued and not too flashy, whatever it is, which added that kind of like gravity to the situation and everything. You know what I mean? The acting is great. I really liked the kind of like the horror elements of it, the way that it was done.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like that little spin on It Follows in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing performances. I mean, come on.
They were very good.
Absolutely.
Performances
great.
Across the board were excellent. The chemistry between the two leads was excellent as well.
Okay, well, actually, you know why the chemistry was great? So first of all, they had 2 weeks of rehearsals just between the two of them, which is very rare.
Yep.
And the director made both of the leads do a lot of kind of like bonding exercise acting exercises, whatever it is. So there is like a time, because I was reading this on IMDb and stuff, he dropped them into a shopping complex, I think, or something like this, and he was like, you guys stay in character buy gifts for each other as if you were the characters. Right,
that's fun.
But it kind of like backfired because some people recognized Joe Bird and he stayed in character the whole time.
Oh wow.
Yeah. That's it. And then he also, like, the director also drove them around on the filming locations, even before production started or anything like that, just to kind of get them into the whole atmosphere. And again, it was, you know, kind of like getting to know each other, whatever it is. So, like, the chemistry there feels so real because they actually had chance to explore it and get into the characters prior to any filming was done.
That's clever.
That's
and
fucking
smart.
I think it's
that
amazing.
Works incredibly well. And we did hear that, didn't we? Even with Obsession, they all sat around in an apartment together and watched movies. They watched Hereditary together and things like that. And you're like, guys, maybe this pays off a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. Write that in your notes.
Write it down. Could be a good idea to get some rehearsal time in if you can.
Seriously. Anyways, but yeah, that's me. What about you?
I think I just agree across the board, don't I? This was an excellent film. So the writer-director's name is Adrian Chiarella, and I think this is his feature debut. I believe that he's done some writing and directing for television and for short films. Yeah. But I think this is his feature debut. Wow. Mm-hmm. Damn. This is so impressive. We keep seeing this year, and I think it's so fascinating to see all of these filmmakers who, yes, have obviously dabbled, have been working in the industry to a degree much of the time, but are making these feature debuts that are just, like, blowing me away. Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, this one also, like, if I'm reading this correctly, it was a little personal to him. From what I understand, he identifies himself as that, right? So, like, when it is so close to heart for yourself and your identity and stuff, like, you will make it good. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I think
like
you pour a lot into it, which
exactly.
makes sense.
So
for
it makes
sure.
a lot of sense.
And it comes across very much throughout the course of the film with regards to the writing and everything as well. It's very, very clear that this is, like, a very personal project. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he grew up in a religious community, but if he didn't, then he's excellent at researching it. And if he did, then obviously that's something that probably, you know, fueled some of the writing for it as well.
He did, from what I remember reading, that he did do a lot of research on how you know, kind of like
high control group. I'm gonna call it that.
Yeah, no,
that's basically what this is.
No, but like how being gay is treated across not just Christianity but other religions that exist,
and he kind of took it into
all of that together to make this movie, right? So like, there was a lot of research done from what he said and what was written.
Gosh, yeah. We can get into more of like the specific plot points because I don't want to give too much away or anything before we do. But so Diggs, where are we sitting with this? Oof. How are you feeling right now?
Oh my God. I mean,
we always talk about this and we're like, it's really hard because I feel like maybe if I came back later, I'd have a different opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I'm also always trying to think of like how we rated the other movies that I really liked.
Yeah. I get you.
You know, so I would definitely say, okay, so, you know, we don't have a perfect rating system. It is kind of like vibes right now, as you mentioned.
It's pretty much vibes.
But you know, because we do talk about some other specific points later on, like it is based on some concrete information and stuff. So I'm definitely, I am definitely at an 8 at minimum. You know what I mean? Like it's very good. Like this is probably going somewhere in the top 10 of the year so far for me.
Yeah. We left the theater and I was like, okay, so I'm at like an 8.5. Mm-hmm. Like that's pretty much where I'm sitting. This is an excellent film. It's so well done. The visuals, the performances, as we mentioned, the set, like everything, the setting, everything to do with it feels so raw and real and very visceral. And, you know, even like the score is great. Like there's a lot of really great stuff to it and it's a really good length.
Yeah,
of a film. I'd bring more movies that are not over an hour and a half. It's great. It's like super tight. Like you could not have edited anything else any better than it was.
Yeah. So I actually thought it was going a little bit fast at the beginning, but I was like, no, it's fine. You don't need to expand on a bunch of stuff.
Exactly.
We get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. Like it's pretty clear what's going on. So anyway.
All right.
Okay. So shall we get into some spoilers with things?
A little bit of spoilers. Okay. I mean,
we never go too hard.
Yeah, that's it. If you're not, have been listening to other episodes in the past, it's not like we say everything that happened in this movie beat by beat. It's not that.
No.
But we will talk about certain scenes that, you know, are not in the trailer.
Aspects of the characters, things like that. Exactly. So, because we keep working him to the bone. Gary, get over here.
You've been warned. Spoilers ahead.
So, as mentioned, as a kind of brief overview of what the plot of the film is, the lead character name has recently, by the way, her name's Arlene, according to Wikipedia. According to Wikipedia.
All right.
IMDb doesn't have any names for anybody, but according to Wikipedia, her name's Arlene.
Strange.
Along with his mother, Arlene, have moved to this very small rural community in Australia and are starting over. I think we're given to understand that his father maybe passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he left. I think he's died and they've obviously struggled greatly. And his mother, unfortunately, has sort of discovered religion in a very sort of overzealous kind of way and is obviously looking for something to cling on to and has chosen to cling on to this and has become part of this church. It's Christianity, but it really is treated as like a cult or like a high control group, essentially. And at the same time as all of this is happening, Name is spending time with another boy from school named Ryan, who, you know, both of them are gay and they are obviously, you know, they're young, they're discovering their sexuality to a degree and also discovering feelings for one another at the same time. And, you know, they're all both having their own personal kind of struggles
in a very violent way.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I love that, how they were, like, pushing each other, and then it's like, oh, we kiss now.
This felt extremely like what I can only imagine what, like, I don't know, teenage boys who are uncertain of themselves in a situation like this would do, where they'd be like, nah, fuck off, and then, you know. Yeah, I feel like that tracked pretty well. And so basically this religious community exists in this area and are extremely homophobic and believe that, of course, you know, the homosexuality is a sin. And when it is discovered through different means that there are certain kids in the community who are queer, they essentially perform an exorcism on them, basically, in order to, you know, quote unquote, like, pray the gay away, basically.
That's actually what it is. Yeah, yes.
They're trying to. That's what it is, and that's what like a lot of these types of groups call this, right? Is praying the gay away, basically. And in this particular case, because we are in a horror film, the post-exorcism, the manifestation of what this religious group or cult has done manifests itself physically as an entity that begins to stalk anyone who's basically had this ritual performed on them, whether it be Name or Ryan or another character. And it takes the shape, I should say, of the person that they are most desiring. Exactly.
Yeah. And it only shows up when they're alone.
Yes. And it can kill them.
Yeah. Like it can have.
I shouldn't even say it can. It does. Some characters.
Yeah. And if not, it's like very, very violent towards them.
That's the cold open of the film, unfortunately, is a girl who is killed by whatever this entity is. Right. So.
Exactly. And it kind of like develops into, you know, trying to understand what it is, if they can do something about it. And also like, how are they going to reconcile their feelings for each other?
Yes.
Along with this whole thing going on.
Well, you know, when the person that you're feeling this attraction and this chemistry with is also looks like this thing that keeps trying to kill you.
Tries to kill you.
It's real difficult to navigate that, I can imagine. So
it's pretty crazy.
Yes.
It's wild.
Yeah. So there's a lot to this, obviously, with regards to, as we mentioned, that's it, like, you know, homophobia in small communities, in different religious communities and things like that, of course, and that's like a pretty major theme, as well as exploring, of course, the ideas that we do see regularly and that are proven time and time again, that adolescent sexuality will blossom and will occur regardless of how much people or adults try to snuff it out. It's not possible. This is something that will happen with people.
Yep.
And it's something that we see real life examples of. And in some cases, if there are certain things that are too repressed, certain people can become not great people. And I think we're seeing really good examples of that with people like the Duggars.
Right.
We've got two brothers in prison now, not just one, two. Wow. Another one was arrested this year.
Very nice.
Yeah.
That's great. So in a completely terrible segue of this, one of the things that I loved, okay,
that was great,
about this is kind of like we were just talking before you brought in the Duggars or whatever.
All right, I'm sorry.
is this whole monster.
The entity, whatever
the entity
is. Yes.
The unknown monster. Yeah, like, yes, it's explained. We understand, you know, it literally looks like the other person and everything. And it will kill you or try to kill you. That was maybe one of my favorite parts of this movie. It was completely different.
Because it's so interesting, isn't it? Because it tackles, there are so many different ideas to what this entity could be. The entity is so fascinating because it could be a multitude of different things. Like it could be a metaphor for the character's fear of their queerness within this community, right?
Prime,
and it could be a manifestation of the sort of evil that this cult basically is putting out into the world and how violence against queer people happens to this day very regularly. And that's something that they always are in fear of in a lot of cases, and that some people, especially in certain parts of the world, are incredibly fearful of. There are places in which you can be killed potentially if you identify as queer. So
that's it. And it's not like something you can escape, because from what we are giving to understand is that even if you, let's say, leave town or whatever it is, it will still follow you and it will just look like someone else that you really have feelings for down the line. It could be 3 years from now and you fall in love with someone else and then it's going to look like that.
And how brilliant of a metaphor is that? Because I'm just going to go into what my first favorite is. How brilliant of a metaphor is that for the idea of shedding light onto the fact that many of these communities do this stuff and ostracize these people because they act as though queerness is a choice and people's sexual orientation is a choice actively that they're making, and they can just pray it away or talk themselves out of it and suddenly it will no longer exist for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the most perfect metaphor for something like this, is that it will follow you everywhere and it will manifest itself as the next person that you have feelings for, because it doesn't just go away. That's not a thing.
Yeah, so, exactly. That's it. That was like by far my, what the most favorite thing about this movie is just how this was thought of. I don't know how. I would really love to dive into the writer's mind of this.
I know.
And the director would be amazing.
Seriously.
But just, you know, how it was represented and everything that it meant. Very smart.
Yeah.
Fucking smart.
It was brilliant for sure. I think my, I mean, that was kind of my first one that I sort of segued into. Yeah. I think my second one was just the kind of overarching like landscape and the setting itself of the film. As we mentioned earlier on in the episode, you know, this is something that's very stripped back. It's very raw. They're in this small, strange sort of industrial town to a degree. It feels very almost segregated. It feels like it's apart from other larger cities. It also feels like
there's 100 people that live there. It's
it does. You know what I mean? Because the church fits, what, 20 people in there at the most? Guess. It's super tiny and dilapidated. And the whole town kind of has that vibe. You know, the houses are old. They're not nice particularly or updated in any capacity. People, like you said, the color palette's very drab, almost very subdued.
Yeah.
Because you're really focused on the tension and what the characters are experiencing. It's more like a hyper focus on that and less, and, you know, realizing that like the place that they have found themselves in, as young people especially, is just incredibly depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously. I don't, was their school also religious?
I didn't catch on that. I don't know because we didn't really spend any time in classrooms particularly.
It was like 30 seconds there.
Yeah, so I didn't catch if there were like nuns or anything teaching at the school. I don't think so. They did have uniforms, but that doesn't mean anything necessarily. So I don't believe so.
Okay.
No. This, but it's anyways. It's funny because it's like all of these kids are here and there is a lot of, you know, obviously overt Christianity within this community as a whole, but at the same time it does feel like the church that Naeem and his mother attend and things like that and that Ryan goes to as well is almost like an offshoot of things that are like the extremists go to this place type of thing. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel like it did not feel mainstream at all. It felt very like boop, but the little like the real extreme people go to this one basically. It's like, you know, Mormonism being what it is with the LDS church, but then like the fundamentalist LDS church being like that offshoot that you're like, oh boy, you guys are wow.
So yes, 100%. There is a lot of layers, like I said, to this movie and everything. You can rewatch it and probably think about a bunch of other things meetings and whatever it is. And this also ties in into kind of like my second favorite thing is the whole writing of it, right? Like you said, it's the landscape and how the setting of the movie is done and kind of like the visual aspect of thing. That together with how it was written and how the characters were written. And we were just talking at the beginning about the mom who's so hateful.
Oh,
I don't know
God.
What the word is for it. Holy shit.
And like, I'm a big Mia Wasikowska fan. I think she's great.
I know, she's
in
great.
Everything. I'm a huge Crimson Peak fan, which probably has a lot to do with it. But even like the Alice in Wonderland movies and stuff, like I really like her. And I do have a tendency, you know, when I'm watching a horror film, especially where like the parents are going through it as well, I have a tendency to try to see things from like a parent's perspective, even if they're being overly strict things like that. And I'm like, you know, I can't imagine myself in this situation. Like, how would I maybe feel about this? I don't know. I don't know how I'd react and things like that. This is probably one of the few times in which I was like, nope, no sympathy on my end.
Yeah, that's it. Like,
absolutely
I would not react
not.
Like her.
No.
You know what I mean? It was fucked up. She was like in super extra denial of everything.
She's heinous, awful. Yeah. What a terrible mother.
And like, she doesn't do anything like physical.
She's like the villain of the fucking film.
Kinda,
the more it goes on, the more I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. But again, she doesn't do anything physical or whatever it is. It's just her reactions to things and what she does with the whole situation.
Ah, but to tie it back to why you like the writing so much, that's what's so brilliant about it. She doesn't have to shout.
Yes.
She doesn't have to hit her child
or
do anything overt to be as villainous as she is. Her denial and lack of acceptance of her own child, that in and of itself is horrible.
I am nodding in my head. You can't see it, but I am nodding
my head.
He's
just nodding at me. Yeah, awful. Oh, she's awful.
Yeah, and like even the other parents, I guess, in the church are also not, they're not great.
No, they're horrible as well. I mean, you'd have to be if you were following this doctrine, wouldn't you?
Like one of the dads just left?
Yeah, right after his kid dies
and
is killed by this entity. But he also, let's be real, he also is already struggling and he already, you know, can't handle this because his kid is gay or he's at the very least exploring his sexuality with another boy.
No, they couldn't do it. Their first reaction was like, no, let's bring this exorcist dude.
Oh my God. He was so scary.
Kinda.
By the way.
Yeah.
I know, with that. The
whole fire and the breathing and whatever it is.
Yeah. And it also, you know what? It triggered something for me, like a memory of even like through documentaries and things that I've seen in testimonials from people who have maybe grown up in environments like this of when they've brought people to like those like conversion camps and shit like that. Like having people just at your house. That's what happens to Naeem, right? Like they're just at the house to perform this ritual on him against his will when him and his mom get home. And you're like, ew, what the fuck? It's awful.
Exactly. Like we were just saying, literally everybody is terrible in this movie except the two characters. Even the sister, you know, we were...
Yeah.
I was kind of like thinking, okay, maybe she's going to be kind of like that helping character, whatever it is. Because at the beginning, she
was,
kind of gave
them
a hint of something. But then nope. She just turned real quick.
Yeah. In her small defense, I will say that I feel that she's struggling with the fact that, one, her brother's been killed, and two, that her father has up and abandoned her and her mother. So I'm sure there's part of that. She's a teenager. Her brain's not fully developed, like all that stuff. But yeah, at the same time, she does some pretty terrible things as well, and then is kind of irredeemable from that point on. But yeah, man, I'm like, oh my God, everyone's awful.
Yeah. Ugh. It's fucked up. Yeah, seriously. Everyone is.
Yeah.
And that also kind of brings me into my last favorite thing of the movie is, since a lot of it revolves around the two main characters, essentially, it's the whole kind of like internal struggle and the depiction of that through the characters and what they do.
Yeah.
Right. One of the main things is how they see and work with the whole entity being there, right? Because like it shows the person that you want the most, or however they called it there.
Yes, the person that you desire most,
most, right? So, and then at the beginning, when this happens, it's pretty clear what the entity is. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, the person is kind of standing there, and it is daylight, the first scene that it happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say two words, and he starts choking you out. I mean, that's pretty fucking clear that it's the entity.
But yeah, it's much easier. I see your point. It's much easier to track, and then it's like, it's almost like the entity is adapting and figuring out how to act like the actual person, so that it doesn't give itself away.
Yeah, there was like a scene towards the middle of the movie where I was 100% convinced that this was the actual person, but it was the entity, because it like adapted and it had memories from the past a little bit. Absolutely insane. But my point is that the way that the characters were written, or the way that they were played, because there was actually a lot of ad-libbing done during the movie.
Okay.
A lot of, like a good amount of scripting, and even the camera movements and the character movements was kind of like not scripted, you know, on purpose.
Cool.
And I think that kind of played a lot into this.
Probably.
You know, of showing the struggle of like, okay, are you? Are you here to try to kill me?
Yeah.
Which also represents, I guess, the internal struggle you would probably feel when you're having this situation come upon you, and like, you know, these feelings that you're trying to understand as a young person and stuff. That was very, very smart.
Yeah, agreed. I will say my final one has to do specifically, because we've talked about the performances throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to highlight specifically the physical performances of a few of the characters, particularly Stacey Clausen as Ryan, when he has multiple moments in which you view him as the entity that is following Naeem around.
Yes.
And also when there are like physical altercations between them that occur, all of the scenes of them going through like the quote unquote exorcism and things like that. He does a lot during those scenes with regards to like the way he's moving. He like jerks around on the floor and stuff. It was really impressive. Like, it's just one of those things that I find never gets enough credit a lot of the time, like the physical performances that people put on. It's like actors in zombie films and things like that who don't always get as much credit as they should for like how hard that is.
Hey, there's like zombie schools. On The Walking Dead, they had a zombie school for...
Well, you'd have to, because there's so many of them. But I'm thinking of the physicality of the zombies in like Train to Busan, instance, right?
Yeah.
Like it's... they're phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that these things kind of deserve a lot of credit, because it's difficult to
that
do this
fair.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know if we have anything else to say, because we've pretty much highlighted like everything across
seriously,
the board.
It's
good.
It's very good. Do watch this movie. It is not what you expect it to be, I think.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's so good. And it has so many interesting things to say about queerness in small communities. And it's cool, because just last month we got to watch At the Place of Ghosts, which also in a completely different way had a lot of really interesting things to say again about queer people in small communities. In this case, it was an indigenous community, obviously. But again, how like generationally there is such a struggle in a lot of different cases to this day with for queer people having to find a way to express themselves safely. It's just something that you see over and over again. It's a little bit disheartening, but this is such a fascinating look into all of this, and it presents it in such an interesting way by adding the supernatural element to it.
Yeah.
But it has such a poignant message, which I think is great.
Yeah, yeah, in the way that it's shown.
Absolutely. Everything. Yep.
Everything we just said.
Yep. We really, really liked it. Yes. Yay. I feel like we've quieted down a little bit just in terms of like new, bigger theatrical mm-hmm. releases. So it's so great that we kind of got this mid-month to be able to go and check this out. I don't know in the next couple of weeks if there's anything too major coming out. But then obviously, you know, heading into July, we have like Evil Dead Burn and things like that. So that'll be a big one to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to still have fun episodes in between. Yeah. We have a childhood trauma that we need to do.
Yeah, we've got a childhood trauma that we've just done recently with a friend of ours. And then we've got another one upcoming before the end of this month that we're going to be recording. So I'm hoping we can, you know, get those out there too. And then we're heading into July and it's full summer season and Fantasia's coming up.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
So many movies that I'm you so will excited. Probably get to see next year if they get a big release that we get to watch this year, which is amazing. Crossed. And also so many movies that will sadly maybe never get a release, not even on VOD. And it's a crazy experience and even thought to be like, I've seen this movie and now no one cannot find it for the life of me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm so glad that we're seeing more of them, at least at the very least, get VOD distribution or streaming releases or something for people to be able to see them, because we see so many fantastic films at Fantasia and I just want them all to get life.
I keep searching for them. I'm like, can I buy it? Can I just buy it on Apple TV? Exactly. I found some.
And
I'm
we bought some. Give it to me. Yeah. You will never stop talking about that movie come true. So
Possessor 2.
Possessor is also great. That one got more of a release. That one got
We're starting a whole other episode here. And wrap it up.
So many things that we've seen that we want to see again. Yeah. Anyway, as usual, you can follow us on all of our socials. We're at Gravetone Pod, and you can check out the website at gravetonepod.com. Follow us over there for all of our episodes. We've got our horror movie picker quiz. If you don't know what to watch tonight, it's only four questions.
It's four questions, and you get a curated list of movies that we personally rated, liked, and wrote about.
Yeah, so. Not movies that we don't like, by the way. So.
Yes, and it's not just random list of movies.
No. We didn't just like randomly generate them. This is actually stuff that we've seen and that we really enjoy.
Yeah.
So hopefully, if you want to, you can check that out. But in the meantime, guys, stay scared and stay tuned.
Ciao, guys.